All right, and this is now time for From the Hip with JT on July the 16th, 2006. And we're going to continue with the Book of Enoch. This will be the Book of Enoch Part 4 today. And JT, it is all yours.
Thank you, brother. Well, good morning or good afternoon, depending on what side of the country you're on. It is time to get it from the hip, and we've been covering the Book of Enoch. My name's JT, I'm your host, and we're currently at chapter 61. If you haven't heard any of the previous messages, you could get them on archive on remnantradio.org. Go to shows from the hip, and the archives are all right there. The Book of Enoch was in the Bible and was removed from the Bible along with the rest of the apocryphal books during the Nicene Council Constantine had gotten together, all the fellows. It was a highly debated book as to whether it should be canonized or not. And the book that was also debated was Revelation. So we had a canonical race between the Book of Enoch and the Book of Revelation during this Nicene Council. Now, none of the other apocryphal books were hidden. However, the Book of Enoch, some felt so strongly about that it was taken and it was hidden. And it was copied in the language Ge'ez, which is a form of Egyptian from Ethiopia. Now, later on, man discovered these books and had them translated. His name was Lawrence, and Dr. Lawrence was a professor of Hebrew at, I believe it was the University of Oxford. Their Archbishop of Cashel, Richard Lawrence. Now, this Book of Enoch is not the Secrets of Enoch. This is the Book of Enoch from the Ethiopic. And there is another Book of Enoch out there that is a Slavic version, a corrupted version of the Book of Enoch, which is known as the Secrets of Enoch. And this was a copy of the Book of Enoch, which through antiquity became corrupted. So if you do and are interested in reading the Book of Enoch, make sure, first of all, that you have the Book of Enoch from the Ethiopic by Richard Lawrence. Continuing in chapter 61, here we read, "Thus the Lord commanded the kings, the princes, the exalted, and those who dwell on earth, saying, Open your eyes and lift up your horns, if you are capable of comprehending the Elect One." And the horns, of course, are the trumpets, the instruments. "The Lord of Spirits sat upon the throne of His glory, and the Spirit of righteousness was poured out over Him. The word of His mouth shall destroy all the sinners and all the ungodly who shall perish at His presence." And this is very much in line with the Scriptures. "The word of His mouth shall destroy them." It proceeds forth from His mouth as a two-edged sword. The Scriptures say that the Word of God is sharper than any two-edged sword, and it is referred to as that coming forth from the mouth of God. And in Revelation, you'll see that depiction also of the glorified Lord. "In that day shall all the kings, the princes, the exalted, and those who possess the earth stand up, behold, and perceive that He is sitting on the throne of His glory, that before Him the saints shall be judged in righteousness, and that nothing which shall be spoken before Him shall be spoken in vain." That means nothing that is spoken in front of Him shall be spoken in vain. Revelation 6. "Trouble shall come upon them as upon a woman in travail, whose labor is severe, when her child comes to the mouth of the womb and she finds it difficult to bring forth. Jeremiah 13. So these people who are the current powers on the earth, or as it says here, those who possess the earth, shall be so stressed out that they will look like a woman who is at the epitome of childbirthing. That's pretty stressed if you've ever seen that. One portion of them shall look upon another. They shall be astonished and shall humble their countenance. Obviously, they can't believe their eyes. And trouble shall seize them when they shall behold this Son of Woman sitting upon the throne of his glory. Jeremiah 31. Here, Christ is known as the Son of Woman rather than Son of Man, because obviously he only had one earthly parent, and that was a female. Now, I'll point out to everybody that when you get to heaven and when you're in spirit, there's neither male nor female, and we're all referred to as mankind down here, that woman means a man with a womb, and we're all referred to as man down here. So we're known as man versus a spirit creature or an angel. We're referred to as man in two forms, one male and one female. So, and as you can see, even the word male is found in female, and man is found in woman. So don't look at women as necessarily different creatures, but they are, in fact, our brothers. So, let's continue with verse 10. Then shall the kings, the princes, and all who possess the earth glorify him who has dominion over all things, him who was concealed. For from eternity the Son of Man was concealed, whom the Most High preserved in the presence of his power and revealed to the elect. Hebrews 1. Isn't that something? How the Most High preserved him in the presence of his power. He shall sow the congregation of the saints and of the elect, and all the elect shall stand before him in that day. Isaiah 65. All the kings, the princes, the exalted, and those who rule over the earth shall fall down on their faces before him and shall worship him. Psalm 72. They shall fix their hopes on this Son of Man, shall pray to him and petition him for mercy. Then shall the Lord of spirits hasten to expel them from his presence. Their faces shall be full of confusion, and darkness shall be added to their faces. The angels shall take them to punishment, that vengeance may be inflicted on those who have oppressed his children and his elect. Now, I noticed that they mention his children and his elect. And they shall become an example to the saints and to his elect. Through them shall these be made joyful. For the anger of the Lord of spirits shall rest upon them. Revelation 14. Then the sword of the Lord of spirits shall be drunk from them. But the saints and elect shall be safe in that day. Nor the face of the sinners and the ungodly shall they thenceforward behold. The Lord of spirits shall remain over them, and with his son, with this Son of Man shall they dwell, eat, lie down, and rise up forever and ever. Revelation 7. The saints and the elect have arisen from the earth, have left off to depress their countenances, and have been clothed with the garment of life. That garment of life is with the Lord of spirits, in whose presence your garment shall not wax old, nor shall your glory diminish. Isaiah 53. In those days the kings who possess the earth shall be punished by the angels of his punishment, wheresoever they shall be delivered up, that he may give rest for a short period, and that they may fall down to worship before the Lord of spirits, confessing their sins before him. Psalm 78. They shall bless and glorify the Lord of spirits, saying, Blessed is the Lord of spirits, the Lord of kings, the Lord of princes, the Lord of the rich, the Lord of glory, and the Lord of wisdom. He shall enlighten every secret thing. Luke 8. generation to generation, and thy glory forever and ever. Deep are all thy secrets and numberless, and thy righteousness cannot be computed. Matthew 13. Now we know that we should glorify and bless the Lord of kings, him who is king over all things. They shall also say, who has granted us rest to glorify, laud, bless, and confess in the presence of his glory? And now small is the rest we desire, but we do not find it. We reject and do not possess it. Light has passed away from before us, and darkness has covered our thrones forever. For we have not confessed before him. We have not glorified the name of the Lord of kings. We have not glorified the Lord in all his works, but we have trusted in the scepter of our dominion and of our glory. In the day of our suffering and of our trouble, he will not save us, neither shall we find rest. We confess that our Lord is faithful in all his works, in all his judgments, and in his righteousness. In his judgments he pays no respect for our evil deeds. Acts 10. All our sins are truly without number. Then shall they say to themselves, our souls are satiated with the instruments of crime. But that prevents us not from descending to the flaming womb of hell. Afterwards their countenances shall be filled with darkness and confusion before the Son of Man, from whose presence they shall be expelled, and before whom the sword shall remain to expel them. Thus saith the Lord of spirits, this is the decree and the judgment against the princes, the kings, the exalted, and those who possess the earth, in the presence of the Lord of spirits. I saw also other countenances in that secret place. I heard the voice of an angel saying, these are the angels who have descended from heaven to earth and have revealed secrets to the sons of men and have seduced the sons of men to the commission of sin. Genesis 6. In those days Noah saw that the earth became inclined and that destruction approached. This is chapter 64. Then he lifted up his feet and went to the ends of the earth to the dwelling of his great-grandfather Enoch. And Noah cried with a bitter voice, hear me, hear me, hear me, three times. And he said, tell me what is transacting upon earth, for the earth labors and is violently shaken. Surely I shall perish with it. After this there was a great perturbation on earth, and a voice was heard from heaven. I fell down on my face when my great-grandfather Enoch came and stood by me. He said to me, why hast thou cried out to me with a bitter cry and lamentation? A commandment has gone forth from the Lord against those who dwell on the earth, that their end may be. For they know every secret of the angels, every oppressive and secret power of the Satans, or the fallen angels, and every power of those who commit sorcery, as well as of those who make molten images in the whole earth. They know how silver is produced from the dust of the earth, and know how on the earth the metallic drop exists. For lead and tin are not produced from earth as the primary fountain of their production. There is an angel standing upon it, and that angel struggles to prevail. Afterwards, my great-grandfather Enoch seized me with his hand, raised me up, and saying to me, go, for I have asked the Lord of spirits respecting this perturbation of the earth, who replied, on account of their impiety have their innumerable judgments been consummated before me. Respecting the moons have they inquired, and they have known that the earth will perish with those who dwell upon it, and that to these there will be no place of refuge forever. They have discovered secrets, and they are those who have been judged, but not thou, my son. The Lord of spirits knows that thou art pure and good, free from the reproach of discovering secrets. He, the Holy One, will establish thy name in the midst of the saints, and will preserve thee from those who dwell upon the earth. He will establish thy seed in righteousness, for kings and for great glory, and from thy seed shall go forth a spring of righteous and holy men without number forever. 2 Peter 2. After this he showed me the angels of punishment, who were prepared to come and to open all the power of water under the earth, that they may be for judgment and for the destruction of all those who remain and dwell upon the earth. And the Lord of Spirits commanded the angels who went forth not to take up the men and preserve them. For those angels presided over all the mighty waters. Then I went out from the presence of Enoch. In those days the word of God was with me, and said, Noah, behold, thy portion has ascended up to me, a lot void of fault, a lot of love and upright. Genesis 6. Now then shall the angels labor at the trees, but when they proceed to this, I will put my hand upon it and preserve it. Noah's ark preserved. Now, it's very interesting that that we've just read that, because I just got online the other day to a website that that I would invite anyone to look at for your own decision factor, and that is arkfever.com. And take a look down there, and apparently the Bible says that the ark has been located in a certain location. It rested on the mountains, and this is in northern Iran. And sure enough, these men went up there, and lo and behold, they find a gigantic 400-foot plank upon plank upon plank of petrified wood. So it's something for you to look at and consider. Very interesting. And it's preserved, as this just says. The seed of life shall be from it, and a change shall enter, that the dry land may not be left empty. I will establish thy seed before me forever and ever, and the seed of those who dwell with thee on the surface of the earth. It shall be blessed and multiplied in the presence of the earth in the name of the Lord. Hebrews 11. And they shall confine those angels who disclosed impiety. In that burning valley it is that they shall be confined, which at first my great-grandfather Enoch showed me in the west, where there were mountains of gold and silver, of iron, of fluid metal, and of tin. I beheld that valley in which there was great perturbation, and meaning it was perturbed, and where the waters were troubled. And when all this was affected from the fluid mass of fire and the perturbation which troubled them in that place, there arose a strong smell of sulfur, which became mixed with the waters, and the valley of the angels who had been guilty of seduction burned underneath its soil. Through that valley also rivers of fire went, to which those angels shall be condemned, who seduced the inhabitants of the earth. And in those days shall these waters be to kings, to princes, to the exalted, and to the inhabitants of the earth, for the healing of the soul and body, and for the judgment of the spirit, fire being a symbol of judgment. Their spirits shall be full of sport, that they may be judged in their bodies, because they have denied the Lord of spirits, and although they perceive their condemnation day by day, they believe not in his name. Revelation 20. And as the inflammation of their bodies shall be great, so shall their spirits undergo a change forever. For no word which is uttered before the Lord of spirits shall be in vain. Isaiah 34. Judgment has come upon them because they trusted in the sport of their bodies and denied the Lord of spirits. In those days shall its waters be changed. For when the angels shall be judged, then shall the heat of those springs of water experience an alteration. And when the angels shall ascend, the water of the springs shall again undergo a change and be frozen. Then I heard holy Michael answering and saying, this judgment with which the angels shall be judged shall bear testimony against the kings, the princes, and those who possess the earth. For these waters of judgment shall be for their healing and for the death of their bodies, but they shall not perceive and believe that the waters will be changed and become a fire which shall blaze forever. Very interesting how these waters seem to correlate with the mercy and the truth. And because it's not received, it is turned into fire and judgment upon them. Chapter 67, after this he gave me the signs of all the secret things in the book of my great-grandfather Enoch, and in the parables which had been given to him, inserting them for me among the words of the book of parables. At that time Holy Michael answered and said to Raphael, "The power of the Spirit hurries me away and excites me. The severity of the judgment, of the secret judgment of the angels, who is capable of beholding the endurance of that severe judgment which has taken place and been made permanent, and not be melted in the presence of it?" Again Holy Michael answered and said to Holy Raphael, "Who is there whose heart is not softened by it, and whose reins are not troubled at this thing?" That being troubled, restraining oneself. "Judgment has gone forth against them by those who have thus dragged them away, and that was when they stood in the presence of the Lord of Spirits." In like manner also Holy Raphael said to Raphael, "They shall not be before the eye of the Lord, since the Lord of Spirits has been offended with them, for as the Lord have they conducted themselves. Therefore will he bring upon them a secret judgment forever and ever. For neither shall angel nor man receive a portion of it, but they alone shall receive their own judgment forever and ever." Now look at this. In verse 4 of chapter 67 in the book of Enoch, about the middle of the verse, it says, "For as the Lord have they conducted themselves." Now, that's basically the same thing that the devil Lucifer basically did. Now here is the only place I could perceive a reference to creative powers. If they said, "As the Lord have they conducted themselves," this could also possibly refer to the possibility that they did in fact create physical bodies for themselves when they were taking wives for themselves and bearing children. So it says here, "As the Lord have they conducted themselves." It's a very interesting statement, because we know that God is the creator, and here there's kind of a suggestion that they had taken physical body form as angels. So, because they had children and they were with the women, etc. There's a lot of different ways to look at that, I guess, but we'll never really know until that final day when we're there at the feast and we're consuming the knowledge of the Lord for 1,000 years. Chapter 68. After this judgment, they shall be astonished and irritated, for it shall be exhibited to the inhabitants of the earth. Behold the names of those angels. These are their names. The first of them is Semyaza, the second Arstikapha, the third Arman, the fourth Kakabael, the fifth Turel, the sixth Rumio, the seventh Daniel, the eighth Kael, the ninth Barkael, the tenth Azazel, the 11th Armers, the 12th Batarial, the 13th Basasael, the 14th Ananel, the 15th Turial, the 16th Semapisal, the 17th Yetarel, the 18th Turmael, the 19th Tarel, the 20th Rumel, the 21st Azazel. So here we have a couple of Azazels in there. These are the chiefs of their angels, and the names of the leaders of their hundreds, and the leaders of their fifties, and the leaders of their tens. The name of the first is Yekun. He it was who seduced all the sons of the holy angels, and causing them to descend on earth, led astray the offspring of men. The name of the second is Kesabel, who pointed out evil counsel to the sons of the holy angels, and introduced them to corrupt their bodies by generating mankind. Now, this is interesting. It uses the term generating mankind, as if creating mankind or as if having children. The name of the third is Gadrel. He discovered every stroke of death to the children of men. He seduced Eve, now get a load of this, and discovered to the children of men the instruments of death, the coat of mail, the shield, and the sword for slaughter, every instrument of death to the children of men. Now, when it says he seduced Eve, it very well may be speaking about women, because that is the general name that is given to women. From his hand were these things derived to them who dwell upon earth from that period forever. The name of the fourth is Penumi. He discovered to the children of men bitterness and sweetness, and pointed out to them every secret of their wisdom. He taught men to understanding writing and the use of ink and paper. Therefore, numerous have been those who have gone astray from every period of the world, even to this day. For men were not born for this, thus with pen and with ink to confirm their faith, since they were not created, except that, like the angels, they might remain righteous and pure. Nor would death, which destroys everything, have affected them. But by this their knowledge they perish, and by this also its power consumes them. The name of the fifth is Kazyade. He discovered to the children of men every wicked stroke of spirits and of demons, the stroke of the embryo in the womb to diminish it, the stroke of the spirit by the bite of the serpent, and the stroke which is given in the midday by the offspring of the serpent, the name of which is Tabaet, or male. This is the number of the Kezbel, the principal part of the oath which the Most High, dwelling in glory, revealed to the Holy Ones. Its name is Becca. He spoke to Holy Michael to discover to them the secret name, that they might understand that secret name, and thus remember the oath, and that those who pointed out every secret thing to the children of men might tremble at that name and oath. This is the power of that oath, for powerful it is and strong. And he established this oath of Ake by the hands of the Holy Michael. These are the secrets of this oath, and by it were confirmed. Heaven was suspended by it before the world was made forever. By it has the earth been founded upon the flood, while from the concealed parts of the hill the agitated waters proceed forth from the creation to the end of the world. By this oath the sea has been formed, and the foundation of it. During the period of its fury he has established the sand against it, which continues unchanged forever, and by this oath the abyss has been made strong, nor is it removable from its station forever and ever. By this oath the sun and moon complete their progress, never swerving from the command given to them forever and ever. By this oath the stars complete their progress, and when their names are called, they return and answer forever and ever. Psalms 147. Thus in the heavens take place the blowings of the winds. All of them have breathings, and effect a complete combination of breathings. There the treasures of thunder are kept, and the splendor of the lightning. There are kept the treasures of hail and of frost, the treasures of snow, the treasures of rain and of dew. Job 38. All these confess and laud before the Lord of spirits. They glorify with all their power of praise, and he sustains them in all that act of thanksgiving, while they laud, glorify, and exalt the name of the Lord of spirits forever and ever. And with them he establishes this oath, by which they and their paths are preserved, nor does their progress perish. Great was their joy. They blessed, glorified, and exalted, because the name of the Son of Man was revealed to them. He sat upon the throne of his glory, and the principal part of the judgment was assigned to him, the Son of Man. Sinners shall disappear and perish from the face of the earth, while those who seduced them shall be bound with chains forever. 2 Peter 2. According to their ranks of corruption shall they be imprisoned, and all their works shall disappear from the face of the earth. Nor thenceforward shall there be any to corrupt, for the Son of Man has been seen sitting on the throne of his glory. Revelation 5, John 17. Now get a load of this, where it says, according to their ranks of corruption shall they be imprisoned. Now you see, God has a pecking order all the time. A lot of people think, well, you know, you're either going to heaven or you're going to hell, you know. But if you look at the scriptures and actually read into the scriptures led by the Spirit, you will see where not only do people have a third option, that being known as outer darkness, okay, that's for those who are called and they know good and well and they're cast into outer darkness, us humans. But also where people are being rewarded in heaven and on earth in levels. You've got levels of reward when you go there, you know. God is not a communist God. He gives everybody an opportunity to determine what their reward is going to be. So you can verify that in the scriptures with, you know, certain crowns are given to certain ones. They speak of the garment of life here in this book. Other people have spoken that there are also robes of righteousness that are given to people who can approach the throne of God boldly because they're protected by this robe. So, you know, we've got archangels, we've got all these different types of angels, you know, cherubim, seraphim, ophanim, and I don't know if any of those are considered archangels either, but there's obviously levels. I mean, even if a person is cast into hell or a lake of fire, the person, if he was a preacher, you know, or if he was called of God and then is cast in there, and because he preaches falsely, the Bible gives reference to his punishment being greater. So, you know, God is definitely a democratic type of individual. His judgments are righteous. You know, he's not communistic and he's not dictatorial. You know, he'll let you make some decisions on your own. You just simply have to pay the consequences or reap the rewards according to your works, folks. Faith without works is dead. That's major. I mean, people knock works and you know, old religion says, you know, works is absolute. Well, you know, works is absolute, but it's not all that there is. You know, faith is required. If you do works without faith, then you're not really doing works. See, faith, however, comes first, and then works. Faith without works is dead. You got to have both interacting because of one another in order for either one to count. You get it? All right. Well, moving on. We're gonna continue. We've got unchanged forever and ever. The heaven is blowings of the winds. Okay. He sat upon the throne, and the principal part of the judgment was assigned to him, the Son of Man. Sinners shall disappear and be bound in chains forever. According to their ranks of corruption shall they be imprisoned, and all their works shall disappear from the face of the earth. So we're either rewarded or punished according to our works. Salvation, obviously, is a gift from God. You can't get salvation through works. But if you're saved, then obviously it should beget works because of your appreciation and love because of that salvation. If you are saved and you love God because of that, then you will do what he says. And he says, do this and do that. That's works, folks. Everything wicked shall disappear and depart from before his face. And the word of the Son of Man shall become powerful in the presence of the Lord of Spirits. Isaiah 33. This is the third parable of Enoch. Phew! Boy, the third parable sure was a lot longer than the first and the second. Chapter 69. After this, the name of him living with him, of this Son of Man living with the Lord of Spirits, was exalted by the inhabitants of the earth. Psalms 86. It was exalted in the chariots of the Spirit, and the name went forth in the midst of them. From that time I was not drawn in the midst of them, but he seated me between two spirits, between the north and the west, where the angels received their ropes to measure me a place for the elect and the righteous. There I beheld the fathers of the first men and the saints, who dwell in that place forever. Zechariah 14. So here, this is another reference that I have read about in a certain book about who's in heaven, about a man who was taken there, and I've come across a couple people that the Lord's put in my path, and they've been there. And there are the saints dwelling with, you know, as the Bible says, though he die, yet shall he live. I mean, Christ even said to the thief on the cross, right next to him there, he says, today you shall be with me in paradise. So isn't that beautiful? The man was taken there, you know, immediately. I mean, he doesn't know the difference between, you know, the moment he dies and the moment he enters into eternity. When you walk into eternity, folks, I mean, there is no yesterday, today, and tomorrow anymore. It's just eternity. It's a hard thing to explain, but that's what Christ told him. Chapter 70. Afterwards, my spirit was concealed, ascending into the heavens. I beheld the sons of the holy angels treading on flaming fire, whose garments and robes were white, and whose countenances were transparent as crystal. Now get a load of this. He speaks of both garments and robes. Okay, so we've got two things mentioned here. Very much like the righteous and the elect are mentioned, okay? So just keep that in mind. We've got garments of salvation and robes of righteousness. And here you've got the holy angels treading on flaming fire, whose garments and robes were white and whose countenances were transparent as crystal. I saw two rivers of fire glittering like the hyacinth, and I fell on my face before the Lord of Spirits. And Michael, one of the archangels, took me by my right hand. Now, I say that there's got to be four classifications of angels at least, because we see here the word archangels is used when it wasn't used previously as a name. The cherubim, the seraphim, and the ophanim are all mentioned here back in chapter 60, and then it says all the angels of power and all the angels of the Lord. So here we've got three classifications plus the angels of the Lord, namely of the elect one and of the other power. He shall carry all the holy above, and to the power of God, cherubim, seraphim, the ophanim, the angels, all the angels of power. It's like it's a classification here. It's a separate classification almost. So who knows if the archangels and one of these classifications are the same or different. So Michael, one of the archangels, took me by my right hand, raised me up, and brought me out to where was every secret of mercy and secret of righteousness. He showed me all the hidden things of the extremities of heaven, all the receptacles of the stars, and the splendors of all, from whence they went forth before the face of the holy. And he concealed the spirit of Enoch in the heaven of heavens. There I beheld. Now this shows again levels this time of heaven. Here we've got the first heaven, which you see by day, the second heaven, which you see by night, and then the third heaven, which is behind, the scriptures say, behind the veil of the universe. Now, if the universe is a veil compared to heaven, that's pretty dang big. Okay, that's a lot. Okay? So you could probably cruise around that for eternity and not see it all. There I beheld in the midst of that light that in it there was that which was built with stones of ice, and in the midst of these stones tongues of living fire. My spirit saw around that which encompassed this flaming habitation. On one of its extremities that there were rivers full of living fire which encompassed it. Living fire, folks. Living fire. That sounds so much like the Holy Spirit. Then the seraphim, the cherubim, and the ophanim surrounded it. These are those who never sleep, but watch the throne of this glory. And I beheld angels innumerable, thousands of thousands and myriads of myriads, who surrounded that habitation. Revelation 5. Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, Fanuel, and the holy angels who were in the heavens above went in and out of it. Michael, Raphael, and Gabriel went out of that habitation, and holy angels innumerable. With them was the Ancient of Days, whose head was white as wool and pure, and his robe was indescribable. Daniel 7. Wow. That just impresses me every time I hear this kind of stuff. Then I fell upon my face, while all my flesh was dissolved, and my spirit became changed. I cried out with a loud voice, with a powerful spirit, blessing, glorifying, and exalting. And those blessings which proceeded from my mouth became acceptable in the presence of the Ancient of Days. The Ancient of Days came with Michael and Gabriel, Raphael and Fanuel, with thousands of thousands and myriads of myriads, which could not be numbered. Then that angel came to me, and with his voice saluted me, saying, Thou art the offspring of man, who art born for righteousness, and righteousness has rested on thee. Hebrews 13. The righteousness of the Ancient of Days shall not forsake thee. He said, He shall call to thee peace in the name of the existing world, for from thence has peace gone forth since the world was created, and thus shall it happen to thee forever and ever. All who shall exist, and who shall walk in thy path of righteousness, shall not forsake thee forever. With thee shall be their habitations, with thee their lot, nor from thee shall they be separated forever and ever. And thus shall length of days be with the offspring of man. Peace shall be to the righteous, and his upright path to the righteous, in the name of the Lord of spirits, forever and ever. J-N-O 14. What is J-N-O? I'm assuming it's John. J-N-O 14. Chapter 71. The Book of the Revolutions of the Luminaries of Heaven. You know, that I got a comment on that last chapter. That presence of Almighty God with the living fire, it just leaves me... changed. You know, every time I hear about that, you know, I love the one Disney movie, the Prince of Egypt, because it shows, you know, a depiction of Moses growing up and you know, being chosen by God, and you know, he killed the Egyptian and all this, and he's got a brother and et cetera, et cetera, the whole family story. Kind of like the Ten Commandments. And it shows a scene in there of that living fire where he's going through these cave type areas and he's trying to find a sheep. He's in the deep part of the mountain and he sees a light and he goes in there and he finds out that this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he's talking to him through a bush. And the power comes out and everything, and then it sweeps him up and it carries him about and he's baptized in this living fire, in this holy fire. He's surrounded by it, and it's permeating him, and it's going through his eyeballs. You know, you can just see it, and it changes his heart. You know, it makes him a new man. He's got a whole another sense about him, a seventh sense that we discussed in previous archives. This living fire, I saw that, and I said, I don't know who drew that, but they certainly have an idea as to what God is really like, you know, his presence. It's just remarkable. Chapter 71, the book of the revolutions of the luminaries of heaven according to their respective classes, their respective powers, their respective periods, their respective names, the places of their nativity, and their respective months, which Uriel, the holy angel who was with me, explained to me, he who conducts them. The whole account of them, according to every year of the world forever, until a new work shall be effected, which will be eternal. Revelation 21. Very interesting. So here we have every year of the world forever, until a new work shall be effected, which is eternal. So here now we've got a confirmation of Revelation 21. I'm assuming off the top of my head that that is about a new heaven and a new earth. This is the first law of the luminaries. The sun and the light arrive at the gates of heaven, which are on the east, and on the west of it at the western gates of heaven. I beheld the gates whence the sun goes forth, and the gates where the sun sets, in which gates also the moon rises and sets, and I beheld the conductors of the stars. Among those who precede them, six gates were at the rising and six at the setting of the sun. All these respectively, one after another, are on a level, and numerous windows are on the right and on the left sides of those gates. First proceeds forth the great luminary, which is called the sun, the orb of which is as the orb of heaven, the whole of it being replete with splendid and flaming fire, its chariot where it ascends the wind blows. The sun sets in heaven, and returning by the north to proceed toward the east, is conducted so as to enter by that gate and illuminate the face of heaven. Now get a load of that. Here we've got the sun setting in heaven, or in the sky, and returning by the north to proceed toward the east is conducted. So here we've got, it sounds to me like the sun is going in reverse order here. Either that, or the whole planet was in a different location before. Get a load of that. Now, here's what I would suggest. You have the axis of the Earth continually getting more slanty. So you've got coal being found under Greenland, which is a gigantic ice pack, and they believe that the entire planet at one time was a greenhouse effect. So it's strange to me to think that. I wonder if the sun used to rise the other way around because the planet actually spun, or it had a different axis. You know what I'm saying? So I wonder if he's looking down, but it sounds to me like he's looking up at the sun, you know, with the entering of the gates and the setting and stuff like that. The only way you could get this kind of view is from Earth, and these gates possibly being the months, the seasons, this type of thing. So, but here he says that it proceeds toward the east, is conducted so as to enter by that gate and illuminate the face of heaven. In the same manner, it goes forth in the first month by a great gate. It goes forth through the fourth of those six gates, which are at the rising of the sun. And in the fourth gate, through which the sun with the moon proceeds, in the first part of it, there are 12 open windows from which issues out a flame when they are opened at their proper periods. So here we've got some type of science being explained to us in a fashion that probably only a scientist could understand. So we're going to burn through this rather quickly and hope that God gives you some revelation. When the sun rises in heaven, it goes through forth through this fourth gate 30 days, and by the fourth gate in the west of heaven on a level with it descends. Now get a load of that. He's confirming by saying that the sun descends in the west. During that period, the day is lengthened from the day and the night curtailed from the night for 30 days. Then the day is longer by two parts than the night. The day is precisely 10 parts and the night is 8. The sun goes forth through this fourth gate and sets in it and turns to the fifth gate during 30 days, after which it proceeds from and sets in the fifth gate. Then the day becomes lengthened by a second portion, so that it is 11 parts, while the night becomes shortened and is only 7 parts. The sun now returns to the east, entering into the sixth gate and rising and setting in the sixth gate 31 days on account of its signs. At that period, the day is longer than the night, being twice as long as the night, and becomes 12 parts. But the night is shortened and becomes 6 parts. Then the sun rises up, that the day may be shortened and the night lengthened, and the sun returns toward the east, entering into the sixth gate, where it rises and sets for 30 days. When that period is completed, the day becomes shortened precisely 1 part, so that it is 11 parts, while the night is 7 parts. Then the sun goes from the west, from that sixth gate, and proceeds eastwards, rising in the fifth gate for 30 days, and setting again westwards in the fifth gate of the west. Okay, so I see what he's saying here with the east and the west. It's kind of the sun's axis. It rises toward the eastern portion of the sky and sets further toward the western portion, and then it changes and rises closer toward the western portion and sets closer to the eastern portion. So it's kind of a pogo type of thing. It goes back and forth. It's arc of travel. So this is where he's getting the east and the west thing. At that period, the day becomes shortened 2 parts and is 10 parts, while the night is 8 parts. Then the sun goes from the fifth gate and it sets in the fifth gate of the west and rises in the fourth gate for 31 days on account of its signs setting in the west. At that period, the day is made equal with the night, and being equal with it, the night becomes 9 parts and the day 9 parts. Then the sun goes from that gate as it sets in the west, and returning to the east proceeds by the third gate for 30 days, setting in the west at the third gate. At that period, the night is lengthened from the day during 30 mornings, and the day is curtailed from the day being 30 days, the night being 10 parts precisely, and the day 8 parts. The sun now goes from the third gate, and it sets in the third gate at the west. But returning to the east, it proceeds by the second gate of the east for 30 days. So here apparently the sun is rising in the east and setting in the west. In like manner also it sets in the second gate in the west of heaven. At that period the night is 11 parts and the day 7 parts. Then the sun goes at that time from the second gate as it sets in the second gate in the west, but returns to the east, proceeding by the first gate for 31 days, and sets in the west in the first gate. At that period the night is lengthened as much again as the day. It is 12 parts precisely, while the day is 6 parts. Into that gate it enters for 30 days and sets in the west, in the opposite part of heaven. At that period the night is contracted in its length a fourth part, that is one portion, and becomes 11 parts. The day is 7 parts. Then the sun returns and enters into the second gate of the east. It returns by these beginnings 30 days, rising and setting. At that period the night is contracted in its length. It becomes 10 parts and the day 8 parts. Then the sun goes from that second gate and sets in the west, but returns to the east and rises in the east in the third gate, 31 days, setting in the west of heaven. At that period, the night becomes shortened. It is 9 parts, and the night is equal with the day. The year is precisely, get a load of this, folks, 364 days. Now, science, modern science, has determined that the year is 365.2 or 0.3 days. That's how long a year is. But according to this calendar, and it is verified with a direct quote that says the year is precisely 364 days. And I've heard of this Enochian calendar and other material that I've researched, and it verifies that the calendar, the Enochian calendar is, or I should say the calendar of Enoch, and not use that Enochian word, because that's also that Enochian is linked with the bad Enoch and his magic. So we'll say the calendar of Enoch. Enoch's calendar was 364 days, not giving any, not giving any respect to whether you're in the summer or the winter when you take a look at your months. Now here, obviously, we know with our modern calendar that when it's January the 1st, it's going to be cold. And when it's June, it's going to be hot. However, according to this 364-day calendar, that means that every single year, you're going to miss a day. So in, 150 to 200 years, it's going to be hot in January and cold in June. But this doesn't give any regard, any respect toward that. It simply says this is the way that it is. So I do wonder, indeed, how many years, according to this calendar, what year it truly would be today. Very interesting. Anyway, we discuss a little bit more about the timetables of God in a archive that is called the Creator's Calendar. And you can look that up as well. So he continues, the sun has thus completed its beginnings, and a second time goes round from these beginnings. The lengthening of the day and night and the contraction of the day and night are made to differ from each other by the process of the sun. By means of this process, the day is daily lengthened, and the night nightly approaches. This is the law and progress of the sun, and its turning, when it turns back, turning 60 days and going forth. This is the great everlasting luminary, that which he names the sun forever and ever. Genesis 1, Malachi 1. This is also that which goes forth, a great luminary, and which is named after its peculiar kind, as God commanded. So, the sun is named after its peculiar kind. And thus it goes in and out, neither slackening nor resting, but running on in its chariot by day and by night. It shines with a seventh portion of light from the moon, but the dimensions of both are equal. So when you look at the moon, apparently all this stuff is from Earth's perspective. When you look at the moon, it's about the same size, it would say, as the sun. The dimensions of both are equal. Yet the moon shines a seventh portion of the light. It's one seventh as bright as the sun. Very interesting. Chapter 72, after this law, I beheld another law of an inferior luminary, the name of which is the moon, and the orb of which is as the orb of heaven. So here, this is interesting, because if you look at a brother's testimony, I wouldn't say testimony, his ministry, and his name is Perry Stone. He shows you a scientific picture of the universe. And the universe is like a globe. And it's interesting that the northern part of the universe, if you will, that the universe is like worlds and worlds inside of a world. So here the universe has a big pie wedge taken out from the northern section. And I would imagine that if you saw it as a ball, it very well may look like a cone has been removed. Instead of just a straight pie wedge, it could be a pie wedge, it could be a cone looking, but anyway, from a two-dimensional, from a flat picture, it looks like a pie wedge of nothing in the northern part of the universe. So this section, he continues, goes into how the Bible refers to the coming, you know, of the great city, and the how this section of the universe would be considered, you know, taken away, and it's going to be returning and stuff. It's very interesting. I can't exactly quote the man, but what's interesting here is that in the book of Enoch, chapter 72, it says, the name of which is the moon, and the orb of which is as the orb of heaven. So the orb, or the orbit of which, I would look at that as like he's describing the moon as well. It's an inferior luminary, the name of which is the moon, and the orb of which is as the orb of heaven. Either he's saying, look, it's traveling through the heavens, or he's saying this is like a representation of the heavens. Its chariot, which it secretly ascends, the wind blows, and light is given to it by measure. Every month, as its exit and entrance, it becomes changed, and its periods are as the periods of the sun. And when in like manner its light is to exist, its light is a seventh portion from the light of the sun. Thus it rises, and at its commencement toward the east goes forth for 30 days. At that time it appears and becomes to you the beginning of the month. 30 days it is with the sun in the gate from which the sun goes forth. Genesis 1, Psalms 113. Half of it is in extent seven portions, one half, and the whole of its orb is void of light. So he's saying the whole of its face is void of light, except a seventh portion out of the 14 portions of its light. And in a day it receives a seventh portion, or half that portion of its light. Its light is by sevens, by one portion, and by the half of a portion. It sets with the sun. And when the sun rises, the moon rises with it, receiving a half portion of light. On that night, at the beginning of its day, previously to the day of the month, the moon sets with the sun. And on that night, it is dark in its 14 portions, that is, in each half, but it rises on that day with one seventh portion precisely, and in its progress declines from the rising of the sun. During the remainder of its day, its light increases to 14 portions. Wow. Now, folks, that was caveman science right there. You don't really understand it in your language and mine, but, you know, you'd probably have to be there to really appreciate it. Chapter 73, then I saw another progress and regulation which he effected in that law, the progress of the moons and everything relating to them. Uriel showed me the holy angel who conducted them all. Their stations I wrote down, and he showed them to me. I wrote down their months as they occur, and the appearance of their light, until it is completed in 15 days. So here you've got what he's calling the progress of the moons, meaning the progress of the phases of the moon, or the different phases of the moon, and the appearance of their light until it is completed in 15 days. In each of its two seven portions, it completes all its light at rising, and at each of its seven portions, it completes all its darkness at setting. On stated months, it changes its setting, and on stated months, it makes its progress through each gate. In two gates, the moon sets with the sun. In those two gates, which are in the midst, in the third and fourth gate, from the third gate, it goes forth for 7 days and makes its circuit. Again, it returns to the gate whence the sun goes forth, and in that completes the whole of its light. Then it declines from the sun and enters in 8 days into the sixth gate, from which the sun goes forth. When the sun proceeds from the fourth gate, the moon goes forth for 7 days until it passes from the fifth gate. Again, it returns in 7 days to the fourth gate, and completing all its light, declines, and passes on by the first gate in 8 days, and returns in 7 days to the fourth gate, from which the sun goes forth. Thus I beheld their stations, as according to the fixed order of the months, the sun rises and sets. At those times there is an excess of 30 days belonging to the sun in 5 years. Now get a load of this. Here's where the time is made up, okay? There is an excess of 30 days belonging to the sun in 5 years. All the days belonging to each year of the 5 years when completed amount to 364 days, and to the sun and stars belong 6 days, 6 days in each of the 5 years, thus 30 days belong to them, so that the moon has 30 days less than the sun and stars. So you've got new moons during 5 years for 30 days. Now that's very interesting. That's not making up for the time over the years, but it is explaining to you that the sun shines constantly while the moon has dark phases. The moon brings on all the years exactly, that their stations may come neither too forward nor too backwards a single day, but that the years may be changed with correct precision in 364 days. In 3 years, the days are 1,092. In 5 years, they are 1,820. And in 8 years, 2,912 days. So here he's got mathematics just to confirm that it's 364 days, not a day longer or a day shorter, and that the moon keeps this precise timing. To the moon alone belong in 3 years 1,062 days. In 5 years, it has 50 days less than the sun, for an addition being made to the 1,062 days. In 5 years, there are 1,770 days, and the days of the moon in 8 years are 2,832 days. For its days in 8 years are less than those of the sun by 80 days, which 80 days are its diminution, diminution in 8 years. Anyway, it diminishes. The year then becomes truly complete according to the station of the moons and the station of the sun, which rise in different gates, which rise and set in them for 30 days. So a lot of credibility for the year is given to the moon. And throughout antiquity, the calendar of the Hebrews is known as a lunar calendar, because this is how they gauge the months, is by the moon, not by the sun or a solar calendar. Chapter 74. These are the leaders of the chiefs of the thousands, those who preside over all creation and over all the stars, with the 4 days which are added and never separated from the place allotted them, according to the complete computation of the year. And these serve 4 days which are not computed in the computation of the year. Respecting them, men greatly err, for these luminaries truly serve in the mansion of the world 1 day in the first gate, 1 in the third gate, 1 in the fourth, and 1 in the sixth gate. and the harmony of the world becomes complete every 364th state of it, for the signs, the seasons, the years, and the days. Uriel showed me the angel whom the Lord of glory appointed over all the luminaries, Genesis 1. Of heaven, in heaven, and in the world, that they might rule in the face of the sky, and appearing over the earth, become conductors of the days and nights, the sun, the moon, the stars, and all the ministers of heaven, which make their circuit with all the chariots of heaven. So here we've got the ministers of heaven, meaning the servants of the skies. Thus Uriel showed me 12 gates open for the circuit of the chariots of the sun in heaven, from which the rays of the sun shoot forth. From these proceed heat over the earth when they are opened in their stated seasons. They are for the winds and the spirit of the dew, when in their seasons they are opened in heaven at its extremities. 12 gates I beheld in heaven at the extremities of the earth, through which the sun, moon, and stars, and all the works of heaven proceeded at their rising and setting. Many windows also are open on the right and on the left. One window at a certain season grows extremely hot. So also are there gates from which the stars go forth as they are commanded, and in which they set according to their number. I saw likewise the chariots of heaven running in the world above to those gates in which the stars turn, which never set. One of these is greater than all, which goes round the whole world. So, if you take a look at some of the literature as far as the Gospels and the stars is concerned, some of the literature that's on the Christian market, then you can take a look at some of the science that he's referring to here, and the paths and the chariots, as he would say, that these different heavenly bodies take, and understand a little bit more so what he's talking about. So as God says, you know, let them be for days, years, signs, and seasons. You know, he uses puts the word signs in there, and everybody seems to just gloss right over that. But here is another confirmation of the Genesis. Chapter 75, and at the extremities of the earth I beheld 12 gates open for all the winds from which they proceeded and blow over the earth. Three of them are open in the front of heaven, three in the west, three on the right side of heaven, and three on the left. So get a load of this. Three of them are opened in the front of heaven. Okay, now point your nose eastward. Three in the west, that would be behind you. Okay? Three on the right side of heaven, and three on the left. So we've got right, left, and west mentioned, which means three of them are open in the front of heaven, as if heaven was in the east. And of course, this is the direction that the Lord will be coming, is from the east. The first three are those which are towards the east. See, there's your confirmation. Three are towards the north, three behind those which are upon the left towards the south, and three on the west. Let's see, three behind those which are upon the left, okay, toward the south, and three on the west. From four of them proceed winds of blessing and of health, and from eight proceed winds of punishment, when they are sent to destroy the earth and the heaven above it, all its inhabitants, and all which are in the waters or on dry land. The first of these winds proceed from the gate termed the Eastern, through the first gate on the east, which inclines southwards. From this goes forth destruction, drought, heat, and perdition. From the second gate, the middle one, proceeds equity. There issue from it rain, fruitfulness, health, and dew. And from the third third gate northward precede cold and drought. After these proceed the south winds through three principal gates. Through their first gate, which inclines eastward, proceeds a hot wind. But from the middle gate proceed grateful odor, dew, rain, health, and life. From the third gate, which is westwards, proceed dew, rain, blight, and destruction. After these are the winds to the north, which is called the sea. They proceed from three gates. The seventh gate is that which is on the east, inclining southward. From this proceed dew, rain, blight, and destruction. From the middle direct gate proceed rain, dew, life, and health. And from the third gate, which is westward, inclining toward the north, proceed mist, frost, snow, rain, dew, and blight. After these, in the fourth quarter, are the winds to the west. From the first gate, inclining northwards, proceed dew, rain, frost, snow, cold, and chill. From the middle gate, proceed rain, health, and blessing. And from the last gate, which is southwards, proceed drought, destruction, scorching, and perdition. The account of the 12 gates of the four quarters of heaven is ended. All their laws, all their infliction of punishment, and the health produced by them have I explained to thee, my son, Methuselah. The Book of Enoch, chapter 76. The first wind is called the Eastern because it is the first from Adam to the flood. Here we have in parentheses, from Adam to the flood. The second is called the South, because the Most High there descends, and frequently there descends He who is blessed forever, from flood to the cross. Christ descended in a pre-human body. Judges 13. The Western wind has the name of diminution, because there all the luminaries of heaven are diminished and descend, in parentheses, from the cross to the second coming, our gospel age. The fourth wind, which is named the north, in parentheses, millennium, is divided into three parts, one of which is for the habitation of man, another for seas of water with valleys, woods, rivers, shady places, and snow, and the third part contains paradise. Seven high mountains I beheld, higher than all the mountains of the earth, from which frost proceeds, while days, seasons, and years depart and pass away. Revelation 22. Seven rivers I beheld upon earth, greater than all rivers, one of which takes its course from the west into a great sea, its water flows. Two come from the north to the sea, their waters flowing into the Erythraean Sea on the east, and with respect to the remaining four, they take their course in the cavity of the north, two to their sea, the Erythraean Sea, and two are poured into a great sea where also it is said there is a desert. Seven great islands I saw in the sea and on the earth, seven in the great sea. So here we've got a spiritualization that has been put in parentheses, probably by Brother Lawrence, as he was reading some type of revelation occurred to him, and he, I'm assuming, put these parentheses in, because I don't know who else would have revised it like that. I don't think this book has been revised. Chapter 77. The names of the sun are these. One, Aries, the other, Tomas. The moon has four names. The first is Asanya, the second, Ebla, the third, Benes, and the fourth, Ere. These are the two great luminaries whose orbs are as the orbs of heaven, and the dimensions of both are equal. Here again they're saying that their orb, which is, you know, the you would think it means orbit, but that would still indicate a circular form, an orbit, whose orbs are as the orbs of heaven. Perhaps he's just saying that their orbs are as the orbs of heaven, as the rest of the planets. You know, they're all basically the same. Or he could be referring to the actual dimensions of heaven or the universe, the second heaven, as is mentioned by Paul, and as is shown in that one picture that Perry Stone showed, that it is like a circle. So certainly I wouldn't believe that the universe is just a flat circle, but it goes in all directions. Therefore, it would resemble a sphere, a ball, and that the northern pie wedge is missing. It's completely void at this time. And if it indeed is a ball or a sphere, then that would imply that it is not just a pie wedge, but like a cone formation that has been removed. So I find that extremely interesting that he's referring here in this ancient book that the orb of the moon and the sun are as the orbs of heaven, and the dimensions of both are equal. He could be referring to all the other planets, or he could be referring to the actual form of, quote, heaven. And this is an ancient book, and here we have science that confirms that, you know, the moon and the sun and the sphere of them are the same as our universe. Our universe is, it goes to a certain length, and then it stops. It stops. Folks, you know, beyond that is I would have to suggest, as God refers to it, outer darkness. So apparently something stops somewhere. Okay, in the orb of the moon, there is a seventh portion of light, which is added to it from the sun. By measure, it is put in until a seventh portion of the light of the sun is departed. They set enter into the western gate, circuit by the north, and through the eastern gate go forth over the face of heaven. So here I believe he's saying it's rising in the east, setting in the west. When the moon rises, it appears in heaven, and the half of a seventh portion of light is all which is in it. So as it rises, it appears in heaven, and the half of a seventh portion of light is all which is in it. This would refer to the sun as it goes higher in the sky, it gets dimmer. Of course, that is confirmed by the moon itself. I know that when it's on the horizon, it certainly seems much brighter and much larger as well. So let's take a look. 14 days, the whole of its light is completed. By three quintuples, light is put into it until its 15 days is light is completed according to the signs of the year. It has three quintuples. The moon has the half of a seventh portion. Science, folks. During its diminution, on the first day, its light decreases a 14th part. On the second day, it decreases a 13th part. On the third day, a 12th part. On the fourth day, an 11th part. On the fifth day, a 10th part. On the sixth day, a 9th part. On the seventh day, it decreases an 8th part. On the eighth day, it decreases a 7th. On the ninth day, it decreases a 6th. On the 10th day, it decreases a 5th. On the 11th day, it decreases a 4th. On the 12th day, it decreases a 3rd part. On the 13th day, it decreases a 2nd part. On the 14th day, it decreases a half of its 7th part. And on the 15th day, the whole remainder of its light is consumed. On stated months, the moon has 29 days. It also has a period of 28 days. Uriel likewise showed me another regulation, when light is poured into the moon, how it is poured into it from the sun. All the time that the moon is in progress with its light, it is poured into it in the presence of the sun until its light is in 14 days completed in heaven. And when it is wholly extinguished, its light is consumed in heaven. And on the first day, it is called the new moon, for on that day, light becomes precisely completed on the day that the sun descends into the west, while the moon ascends at night from the east. The moon then shines all the night until the sun rises before it, when the moon disappears in turn before the sun. Where light comes to the moon, there again it decreases, until all its light is extinguished, and the days of the moon pass away. Then its orb remains solitary without light. During 3 months, it affects in 30 days each month its period, and during 3 more months, it affects it in 29 days each. These are the times in which it affects its decrease in its first period, and in the first gate, namely in 177 days. And at the time of its going forth during 3 months, it appears 30 days each, and during 3 more months, it appears 29 days each. In the night, it appears for each 20 days as the face of a man, and in the day as heaven, for it is nothing else except its light. So he's saying in the day it appears as heaven, or as the sky, for it is nothing else except its light. It is nothing else except the light of heaven. Very interesting how this is spoken and translated. You got to kind of have a wide sight in order to understand what he's talking about, and certainly a scientific background would help at this point. Chapter 78, "And now, my son Methuselah, I have shown thee everything, and the account of every ordinance of the stars of heaven is finished. He showed me every ordinance respecting these, which takes place at all times and in all seasons, under every influence, in all years, at the arrival and under the rule of each, during every month and every week. He showed me also the decrease of the moon, which is affected in the sixth gate, for in that sixth gate is its light consumed. From this is the beginning of the month, and its decrease is affected in the sixth gate in its period, until 177 days are completed according to the ordinance of the week, 25 weeks and 2 days. Its period is less than that of the sun, according to the ordinance of the stars, by 5 days in one time precisely. When that their visible situation is completed, such is the appearance and likeness of every luminary which Uriel, the great angel who conducts them, showed me." Chapter 79, "In those days Uriel answered me and said to me, Behold, I have showed thee all things, O Enoch, and all things have I revealed to thee. Thou seest the sun, the moon, and those which conduct the stars of heaven, which cause all their operations, seasons, and arrivals of or to return. In the days of sinners the years shall be shortened. Their seed shall be backward in their prolific soil, and everything done on earth shall be subverted and disappear in its season. The rain shall be restrained, and heaven shall stand still. In those days the fruit of the earth shall be late and not flourish in their season, and in their season the fruits of the trees shall be withholden. The moon shall change its laws and not be seen at its proper period. But in those days shall heaven be seen, and barrenness shall take place in the borders of the great chariots in the west. Heaven shall shine more than when illuminated by the orders of light, while many chiefs among the stars of authority shall err, perverting their ways and works. Those shall not appear in their season who command them, and all the classes of the stars shall be shut up against sinners. The thoughts of those who dwell on earth shall transgress within them, and they shall be perverted in all their ways." 2 Timothy, 3rd chapter. "They shall transgress and think themselves gods, while evil shall be multiplied among them, and punishment shall come upon them, so that all of them shall be destroyed." And in parentheses, folks, I find this very interesting, is World War III. And that was a edit, possibly, by John Thompson, Glasgow, in 1882. It this as a reprint and an edited edition with variations, and published by John Thompson, Glasgow, 1882. So I don't know who wrote World War III in there, but the latest could have been in 1882, because in 1821 Richard Lawrence had it written. Now, chapter 80, he said, O Enoch, look on the book which heaven has distilled, and, reading that which is written in it, understand every part of it. Then I looked on all which was written, and understood all, reading the book and everything written in it, all the works of man, and of all the children of flesh upon earth, during the generations of the world. 2 Timothy 3. Immediately after, I bless the Lord, the King of glory, who has thus forever formed the whole workmanship of the world, and I glorify the Lord on account of his long-suffering and blessing toward the children of the world. At that time I said, blessed is the man who shall die righteous and good, against whom no catalogue of crime has been written, and with whom iniquity is not found. Folks, look at this. Catalogue of crime. Whoa. Now that reminds me of the Sears and Roebuck catalogue. I mean, that's like a phone book. Just huge, a catalog of crime. It's like a big city phone book. Now, here he says, blessed is the man who shall die righteous and good. And yet the Bible says that none are righteous. So, therefore, the reference is the righteousness which is in faith, that we receive the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, his blood. And it erases this catalog. I mean, it says right here, against whom no catalog of crime has been written. So lo and behold, folks, this catalog of crime against every one of us, can you imagine a library of catalogs? Whoa. For every man, woman, and child on earth. And this is gone. There is no catalog of crime being written against you by receiving in faith the blood of Christ, with whom iniquity is not found. Then those three holy ones caused me to approach and placed me on the earth before the door of my house. And they said unto me, explain everything to Methuselah, thy son, and inform all thy children, that no flesh shall be justified before the Lord, for he is their creator. Galatians 2. Get a load of that. No flesh shall be justified before the Lord. So here is where it is imperative that we be born again of the Spirit. And once that happens, folks, you're no longer a man of flesh who has had a spiritual experience, but you become a spirit man who is now having a flesh experience. During 1 year we will leave thee with thy children until thou shalt again recover thy strength, that thou mayest instruct thy family, write these things, and explain them to all thy children. But in another year they shall take thee from the midst of them, and thy heart shall be strengthened, for the elect shall point out righteousness to the elect. The righteous with the righteous shall rejoice, congratulating each other, but sinners with sinners shall die, and the perverted with the perverted shall be drowned. Those likewise who act righteously shall die on account of the works of man, and shall be gathered together on account of the works of the wicked. In those days they finished conversing with me, and I returned to my fellow men, blessing the Lord of worlds. Wow. What a ride. Chapter 81. Now, my son Methuselah, all these things I speak unto thee and write for thee. To thee I have revealed all and have given thee books of everything. So here all it preserve, my son Methuselah, the books of the hand of thy father, that thou mayest transmit them to future generations. Wisdom have have I given to thee, to thy children and thy posterity, that they may transmit to their children for generations forever this wisdom in their thoughts, and that those who comprehended it may not slumber, but hear with their ears, that they may learn this wisdom and be deemed worthy of eating this wholesome food. 2 Ezra 14. So here, this book is called Wisdom and Wholesome Food. Blessed are the righteous, blessed all who walk in the paths of righteousness, in whom no crime is found, as in sinners, when all their days are numbered. With respect to the progress of the sun in heaven, it enters and goes out of each gate for 30 days, with the leaders of the thousand classes of the stars, with added and appertain to the four quarters of the year, which conduct them and accompany them at four periods. Respecting these, men greatly err, and do not compute them in the computation of every age, for they greatly err respecting them, nor do men know accurately that they are in the computation of the year. But indeed, these are sealed forever, one in the first gate, one in the third, one in the fourth, and one in the sixth, so that the year is completed in 364 days. Truly have they related, and accurately has been computed that which is marked down, for the luminaries, the months, the fixed periods, the years, and the days. Uriel has explained to me, and has breathed into me, whom the Lord of all creation on my account commanded, according to the might of heaven and the power which it possesses both by night and by day, to explain the laws of light to man of the sun, moon, and stars, and of all the powers of heaven which are turned with their respective orbs. This is the ordinance of the stars, which set in their places, in their seasons, in their periods, in their days, and in their months. These are the names of those who conduct them, who watch and enter in their seasons, according to their ordinance, in their periods, in their months, in the times of their influence, and in their stations. Four conductors of them first enter, who separate the four quarters of the year. After these, 12 conductors of their classes, who separate the months and the year into 364 days, with the leaders of 1,000, who distinguish between the days as well as between the four additional ones, which as conductors divide the four quarters of the year. These leaders of 1,000 are in the midst of the conductors, and the conductors are added each behind his station, and their conductors make the separation. These are the names of the conductors who separate the four quarters of the year, who are appointed over them: Melchel, Helemelech, Melial, and Naral. And the names of those who conduct them are Adnaral, Jaisusal, and Jeumiel. These are the three who follow after the conductors of the classes of stars, each following after the three conductors of the classes, which themselves follow after those conductors of the stations who divide the four quarters of the year. In the first part of the year rises and rules Melchias, who is named Tammany, and the sun. All the days of his influence during which he rules are 91 days, and these are the signs of the days which are seen upon earth. In the days of his influence there is perspiration, heat, and trouble. All the trees become fruitful, the leaf of every tree comes forth, the corn is reaped, the rose and every species of flower blossom in the field, and the trees of winter are dried up. That's something he's talking about, summer. These are the names of the conductors who are under them: Barkel, Zelsabel, and another additional conductor of 1,000 is named Heloyalef, the days of whose influence have been completed. The other conductor next after them is Helemelech, whose name they call the sun. days of his life are 91 days. These are the signs of the days upon earth, heat and drought, while the trees bring forth their fruits, warmed and concocted, and give their fruits to dry. The flocks follow and yean. All the fruits of the earth are collected with everything in the fields, and the vines are trodden. This takes place during the time of his influence. These are their names and orders, and the names of the conductors who are under them. Of those who are chiefs of 1,000, Gedaliel, Kiel, Heel, and the name of the additional leader of 1,000 is Asphael. The days of his influence have been completed. Chapter 82. And now I have shown thee, my son Methuselah, every sight which I saw before thee. I will relate another vision which I saw before I was married. They resemble each other. The first was when I was learning a book, and the other before I was married to thy mother. I saw a potent vision, and on account of these things besought the Lord. I was lying down in the house of thy grandfather, Mahalalel, when I saw in a vision heaven purifying and snatched away. And falling to the earth, I saw likewise the earth absorbed by a great abyss, the mountains suspended over mountains. Hills were sinking upon hills. Lofty trees were cutting off from their trunks, and were in the act of being projected and of sinking into the abyss. Being alarmed at these things, the word fell down in my mouth. I cried out and said, "The earth is destroyed." Then my grandfather Mahalalel raised me up and said to me, "Why dost thou cry out, my son, and wherefore dost thou thus lament?" I related to him the whole vision which I had seen. He said to me, "Confirmed is that which thou hast seen, my son, and potent the vision of thy dream respecting every secret sin of the earth. Its substance shall sink into the abyss, and a great destruction take place." In parentheses, flood, signifying World War III, Matthew 24. "Now, my son, rise up, and beseech the Lord of glory," in parentheses, "for thou art faithful, that a remnant may be left upon earth, and that he would not wholly destroy it. My son, all this is upon earth from heaven. Upon earth shall there be a great destruction." Revelation 7. Then I arose, prayed, and entreated, and wrote down my prayer for the generations of the world, explaining everything to my son Methuselah. When I went out below, and looking up to heaven, beheld the sun proceeding from the east, the moon descending to the west, a few scattered stars, and everything which he has known from the beginning, I blessed the Lord of judgment and magnified him, because he has sent forth the sun from the windows of the east, that ascending and rising in the face of heaven, it might spring up and pursue the path which has been pointed out to it. Well, folks, we're going to stop there at chapter 83. And, no, we're going to read chapter 83. We've got a couple minutes. "I lifted up my hands in righteousness and blessed the Holy and the Great One. I spoke with the breath of my mouth and with a tongue of flesh, which God has formed for all the sons of mortal men." 1 Timothy 6, 1. "That with it they may speak, giving them breath, a mouth, and a tongue to converse with. Blessed art thou, O Lord the King, great and powerful in thy greatness, Lord of all the creatures of heaven, King of kings, God of the whole world, whose reign, whose kingdom, and whose majesty endure forever and ever. From generation to generation shall thy dominion exist. All the heavens are thy throne forever, and all the earth thy footstool forever and forever." 1 Chronicles 29. "For thou hast made them, and over all thou reignest. No act whatsoever exceeds thy power. With thee wisdom is unchangeable, nor from thy throne and from thy presence is it ever averted. Thou knowest all things, seest and hearest them, nor is anything concealed from thee, for thou perceivest all things. The angels of thy heavens have transgressed, and on mortal flesh shall thy wrath be until the day of the great judgment. Now then, O God, Lord and mighty King, I entreat thee and beseech thee to grant my prayer, that a posterity may be left to me on earth, and that the whole human race may not perish, that the earth may not be left destitute, and destruction take place forever. O my Lord, let the race perish from the earth which has offended thee, but a righteous and upright race establish for the plant of a seed forever. Hide not thy face, O Lord, from the prayer of thy servant. Well, folks, we're going to end there at chapter 84. Here, there was a great plead to the Lord regarding the visions that were shown, and the plead was that not all mankind would be extinguished from the earth during this judgment that was going to be called out upon the earth, and that being a judgment of the sinful entire earth through the waters of the deep and the unleashing of the waters of the deep. And mentioned here and verified also in Genesis. So I hope you've enjoyed the reading of the book of Enoch of the Ethiopic. Next week we're going to continue with a few more pages and try to wrap up the book of Enoch here. A lot of times as we're continuing reading, we have to stop and we have to reflect on these things and concentrate, try to figure out what Enoch and Noah are trying to say here as they go through their scientific terminology for very ancient men, kind of like getting scientific terminology from cavemen, if you will. Very very difficult in some areas to decipher what's trying to be said. I guess sometimes it might not be bad to spend a couple years in a theological cemetery, but I enjoy much rather being led in the Spirit by the Word of God. So, folks, you've just got it from the hip, and my name is JT, I'm your host, and if we have any calls at this time, we welcome them always at Remnant Radio, and you can get a hold of us at area code 702-293-5224 with any comments. You can email remnantradio.org. I think the email is a manager at Remnant Radio. So, with that, we'll go ahead and close the program with a little more of them Good News Blues. Are you there, Pilgrim?
Oh, you betcha, man.
Cool.
All right. Okay, well, catch you next week then, huh?
All right, brother. God bless.
Okay, God bless you. Bye-bye.
I'm so glad you came to save us. today.